You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
The teacher who vanished into thin air with his 15-year-old student composed a creepy love song and sang it.
This is Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
But Tad Cummins wasn't crooning to missing ninth grader Beth Thomas. Get this, he's actually singing to another student he was close to. Destiny Parrish, now 19, says Cummins became her confidant when she was about the same age as Beth.
We used to be really, really close. I could talk to him just about anything. You're the kind of one.
Can you imagine? You put your child on the school bus or drop them off at school in the morning. 3 p.m., they're gone. And that's just half the story. The rest of the story is that their school teacher took them. And you don't hear another word. Your little girl gone, missing. With a 50-year-old school teacher, and apparently their so-called flirtation has been going on right under the noses of all the teachers and faculty and administrators at the school. As the days pass by, outrage turns to desperation for the family of Elizabeth Thomas. She has been kidnapped by her teacher, Tad Cummins, and joining us today, a young lady, Destiny Parrish, but by the grace of God, went she. This is the young lady that this same perv teacher sang love songs to. Oh, dear Lord in heaven. Before I go to Destiny, I want to thank our sponsor today. It is CrimeCon. Crime busters, crime sleuths, professional and amateur from all over the country converging in Indianapolis, June 9 through June 11. We're going to find out the latest in crime fighting techniques and hear from experts like Cheryl McCollum in the Cold Case Institute all the way to F. Lee Bailey, who some credit the O.J. Simpson acquittal to. Whether you like that or not, he's going to be with us live. I'm going to be there along with Alan, and we'll be podcasting live. If you go to crimecon.com, use code Nancy to get 20% off. I hope I see you there. I'm really looking forward to it. CrimeCon, thank you for sponsoring our podcast today. This is Crime Stories. I'm Nancy Grace, and with no further delay, I want to go straight out to our special guest, Destiny, who was once a student at the same high school where Elizabeth Thomas was. A student who was exposed to now kidnapper Tad Cummins. Destiny, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Destiny, I've got so many questions, but I'm going to try to take it from A to Z, take it from the beginning. I'm dying to ask you about that ridiculous, or as my children say, redonkulous song he sung you when you're like, you know, what, 14, 15 years old. But I'm going to start at the beginning. When did you first meet the high school teacher, Tad Cummins?
We met at high school, obviously. It was probably my sophomore or junior year of high school.
How old were you?
I was about 14 or 15.
And was it at the same high school? What high school is it?
Calioka.
So you met him 14 or 15. Was he your direct teacher, or were you in his homeroom, or what?
No, he was my direct teacher. I had him for health sciences class.
What is health sciences? Could somebody tell me that?
He just kind of taught us CPR, like the basics of, you know, taking temperatures and all that kind of basic stuff.
Okay. So he's your teacher. You're 14 or 15 years old. How did you develop a special friendship with him?
It really started out, you know, just I would stay after class, something like that. You know, I'd talk to him during lunch, before school, after school, that kind of thing.
About what, Destiny? What did a 50-year-old man have to say to a 14-year-old girl?
Well, back in the day, back when I was, you know, quite a bit younger, I had been going through a lot of different stuff as well, and had actually become really close with Tad, talking to him about some of the stuff, just a safe person to talk to that I didn't really have to worry about because I didn't see him as anything other than a teacher and a friend.
That's interesting that you say that, Destiny. Everyone with me is Destiny, who was once Tad Cummins' student there at Kaleoka High School. That's really interesting, Destiny, because that's the same way Elizabeth was. You know, she doesn't have a mother. The mother is charged with abusing, mistreating all of her children, including Elizabeth. She had been homeschooled her whole life. She just enters a school, a public school, and was going through all sorts of stuff with 9 siblings. She's 1 out of 10. A father that travels all the time. I'm sure she had a lot going on. A lot of, upheaval in her life. So she starts talking to Tad Cummins. How does he reel you in? I mean, did he tell you the whole thing about being a CIA operative that he told Elizabeth? What stories did he tell?
Right at first, he really didn't have too much odd stuff to say. He had said something about being a doctor, and obviously now I know it was a respiratory therapist. But he didn't really go too much in depth whenever we first discussed his, other occupations and stuff like that. I just thought he was a doctor, which was weird because, like everybody else has said, why would a doctor work at a high school? You could be making a lot more money being a doctor of sorts than, you usually will on a teacher's salary for sure.
That's interesting. So before he was a CIA operative, to hear him tell it, he had a career as a medical doctor. Okay.
Yeah.
And a lot of children would think, wow, that's really nice of him to teach at a high school in his spare time.
Yeah.
Okay.
His thing about that was that he liked it. He got out of the job that he had because he wanted to be a teacher.
Okay. I can just see that rolling right off his tongue. Okay, so he told you he was the medical doctor, and he gave up all the money and the prestige because he liked teaching at the high school. Okay.
Yeah.
What other tall tales did he spin? Can you think of any?
Other than, that kind of thing, no, not really. He didn't talk too much himself. It was always, kind of a me talking or him asking about me, how I've been, how things have been, that kind of thing.
Did he ever mention his wife?
He mentioned her, here and there, mostly, in classes or whatever, but he didn't talk too much about her with me. I don't hardly know anything about her, and I went to church with her as well, and I, would have lunch and stuff with him, but I really don't know Jill.
So when you guys were having all these heart-to-heart conversations, his relationship with his wife was not part of that?
No. I mean, like I said, he invited me to church with him, and, obviously she was there, but she didn't ever really talk. She, was kind of a third wheel or a background character. I never heard too much out of her ever when she was around.
So let me understand this. It would be you and Tad and her, and it was as if she was the fifth wheel, not you. The wife was the outsider.
Yeah, it was weird. Like I said, you'd think she'd try and talk to me too or, something, but it was just kind of a mutual silence. I don't know. It was weird.
What would she say? I mean, say for instance, you guys would go to church together. Where would you sit in the car? Where would she sit? What would he talk to her or address her at all?
He would. A lot of times at church, the first time I went, I went just with him. And then, my family and stuff started going as well, and I'd sit with them. I'd, talk to Tad before or after church or whatever, but I did sit with my family at church. But the only reason I ever went was because Tad had invited me.
What did you notice about their relationship?
I didn't notice too much. Like I said, they seem happy, like Facebook and all that, but I just never, you don't hear much about her. I never heard much about, his kids even really. I didn't hear too much about any of his life. It was, like I said, all him trying to figure out how I was and all that kind of stuff.
Did he ever visit your home or where you worked?
He did not. That definitely was not an issue at the time.
How did it come about that he sang a love song to you?
I was a piano player back in the day. I don't play too much anymore. And I'd learned a new song, and I was going to show it to him because, you know, like I said, he was a good friend, and I was really impressed with myself for learning it. So I took him. We went to the music room, which is, you know, right next to his class, and it was after school. And he had sat down first, and he, you know, started playing, and, you know, I just kind of listened. Obviously, I didn't follow after he did. You know, we were kind of done after that, but he started singing that, and like I had said, about halfway through or so, I started recording because I thought he was doing good. I didn't notice the lyrics at first, but I really, you know, I can't sing and play the piano. You know, I thought it was a pretty cool thing to be able to do because I was definitely, you know, quite a bit behind in skill set back then.
Did he say he made up the song? He wrote the song?
He didn't. He never said anything about it. But I tried looking up lyrics and could never find the same song online anywhere or any similar lyrics, anything like that. So I assumed that he did.
I could swim for 1,000 miles in the oceans inside your eyes and never reach the side.
Yeah.
Okay, you're the kind of woman a man can love for the rest of his life, and I don't know why. I feel it's your eyes. Oh, your eyes. Is that ringing a bell, Destiny?
Yeah, for sure.
So, you're in the music room, and where are you sitting, and where is he sitting?
He sat on the bench, you know, in front of the piano, and I just stood behind him. I didn't, you know, sit next to him, because, like I said, we were close, but we had never, like, no physical contact, really. So I wasn't super comfortable, and I was really shy.
After he sings the song with those lyrics, what did he say?
Not too much. About halfway through, some of the drama kids from the drama club at school were right across the hall, and they had heard the piano and, you know, somebody singing, so they came in to check it out. And that was the end of the audio clip, was people coming in and, you know, saying how surprised over how good he was, all that stuff. So we weren't alone at that point.
Yeah, there's nothing like ruining a romantic moment with a underage minor than a bunch of students coming into the class to just burst that bubble. When you were listening to him sing, do you recall what you were thinking or feeling?
Like I said, I didn't think anything of it. I didn't really notice the lyrics too much. I was just kind of there observing it all. And it was after I, you know, got home and listened to it again and played it for, you know, a friend of mine that I realized what was actually being said. And even then, like I said, it didn't hit me because he wasn't ever inappropriate. He was always, I mean, yeah, there were some things that sent up red flags now, but I didn't ever think that any of this would ever happen for sure.
When you say things send up red flags now, like what?
Well, the song for sure. The day that all the students were in his classroom during lunch, and he told them that, you know, the office told him the students couldn't be in there anymore, so he sent them all back to the cafeteria and let me stay and told, you know, me that the office hadn't said anything to him. He just didn't want all the students in his class. You know, that's definitely kind of a red flag, kind of weird that he sent every other student away, like 10 or 15 other kids, and not me.
Okay, explain to me how that went down. I don't know about that. What happened?
Well, I was, like I said, really shy back in high school. Didn't really have too many people I talked to. So during lunch, I would just go into Tad's room and sit in there because I didn't eat anyways. That way I didn't have to sit alone at lunch or sit there and, you know, feel really awkward or anything. So I would sit in his class, and a couple other students would. They'd go in there, play on their phones because he didn't care, even though we had cell phone rules at school. You know, so they could sit in there on their phones or on the computers, stuff like that. And that's what some of the kids were doing. But then Tad, you know, made a class announcement. He was like, "Hey guys, you know, the office called, you know, you guys have to go back to lunch. You know, that you're not allowed to be in here. You're supposed to be at lunch during this time." Everybody else left, and I grabbed my bag and went to leave. And he had told me, you know, that the office hadn't said anything. that he just didn't want, you know, all the kids in his room and that I could stay.
So he cleared the room, kept you in there, and then what if anything, did he say?
Nothing really. I don't remember too much else, just us kind of sitting and chit-chatting like we always did, just another day.
And none of the other students noticed?
No, I guess not. I mean, you know, from what I remember, everybody did quit even after that day going into his room for the most part. You know, I still did, but...
When you say, in retrospect, looking back, there were red flags, what else do you recall?
Those are the two definitely the main things. Because, you know, like I said, a lot of the other stuff, it didn't really seem as if anything was wrong. I didn't, you know, notice too much, other than maybe the day that I moved away from the school.
What happened?
I was a junior in high school. It was late December, right before spring or Christmas break. Sorry. I was moving to Wichita, over to Kansas. So I had, you know, gotten unenrolled from school and transfers and all of that in order. And it was my last day. So I went in and saw him, told him, you know, that he already knew I was leaving, but told him, you know, was going in, telling goodbye and everything, you know, I'd already done it with my other friends and stuff. And it was the end of the day. And I went in and we had talked for a minute and he gave me a hug and he told me, you know, don't ever let anybody tell you you're not beautiful. And then he told me, you know, because I'm not a student anymore of his, that I could add him on Facebook. And, you know, we kept in touch through that, through his cell phone. And, you know, after I moved, like I said, I'd come back, have, you know, lunch or whatever with his wife or go to the school and see him.
And when you would go back, what was his demeanor?
It was always the same. He really always seemed excited to see me. I called the school once and they, you know, transferred me to his room. And as soon as he picked up the phone, you know, you could hear it, you know, Destiny Parrish. And he was just really surprised and excited and, you know, let me know when I could come to school that it wouldn't be during one of his classes. So, you know, we could actually have time to talk, which is probably, you know, a little weird too. But at the same time, you know, I don't want to go during his class.
So let me ask you this. You know that it's just the grace of God that you're not in Elizabeth Thomas's shoes right now, is the way I see it. When you first learned that she had been taken by Tad Cummins, what did you think?
Well, I got the call from my mom at first, and she had let me know, and I was in total denial. I thought, you know, maybe she was messing with me or something, which, you know, why would she? And I get that now, but I saw Tad as, you know, a really, really great guy. I never saw that he would do anything like this. So I did not believe it. And then I had seen the, you know, the reports on Facebook, and I had two or three other people call me. A friend that I haven't talked to in, you know, 3 years called me and was like, oh my gosh, it could have been you. Like, that's, everybody knew he and I were really close. So it was definitely a shock, and I definitely did not want to believe it at first, but it's rough.
When you heard that he had told people he's a CIA operative and a black belt and so many other tall tales, what did you think?
To be honest, I didn't really think too much about it, because, and not anything towards Elizabeth, obviously. She got told what she got told, but it is a very small school, and there are a lot of rumors and suspicions and jokes that get made. We made jokes about one of our other teachers being in CIA. I mean, that's how I took it. I thought maybe somebody made it up as a joke. You know, like I said, I didn't believe that he was who he is. So I didn't believe that he would make up all this crazy stuff about himself. But, you know, obviously he is lied about a lot of things. So
what else do you think he's lied about?
I mean, the entire person that he is, you know, he's not Tad Cummins. He's not, you know, this guy that was my best friend in high school. He lied about all of it. He lied about who he was for who knows how long. Like, you don't just wake up one day and decide you want to be with a 15-year-old, especially after looking back at all the stuff that happened with me years before.
When you say best friends, did your parents ever think it was odd your best friend was a grown man teaching at high school?
We didn't at the time. My mom didn't live here. She lived, a couple states away, and my parents were getting divorced. And my mom was just happy because I was going through a really rough time with all of it that I had somebody to talk to because she had heard from me what Tad was like, and obviously I didn't have all that great of an intel on who he is. So she thought, pretty good of him as well. There were a few, of my friends or, other family members or people I know that thought it was weird. And I just didn't listen to them. I didn't ever think anything of it.
What did they say?
Well, one of them didn't like the fact that we, everybody calls him by his first name. She was a school teacher as well for an elementary school around the area. I don't know which one. And she, she doesn't even do that with her elementary school kids, let them call her by her first name. So she thought that was really weird.
I'm just thinking through what you're saying, and it strikes me that your mom wasn't around. She was living in a different state, and Elizabeth's mom was gone as well. It's interesting how he preys on young girls that are going through an emotional time and neither one with a mother. Do you think that there are other girls like yourself and like Elizabeth that he basically groomed to be his, quote, best friend?
I think there definitely could have been. I know that, nobody I personally know was as close to Tad as I was. I had friends that still talked to him, that still, thought as much as I did of him, but nobody, talked to him as much. Nobody had gone to church and all that stuff. But that's not to say that he wasn't talking to somebody else, during the days that I weren't there or the days that, stuff like that. There's no saying he didn't have another, teacher's pet or favorite.
And none of the other teachers thought it was weird?
No, it was a really small school and everybody was already really tight-knit and close anyway. So, we got a new teacher and he was the same. We didn't think too much of it.
Knowing him as well as you do, where do you think he is? What do you think his plan is?
I definitely really don't know. I really don't think he is still in the U.S. They think maybe he's hiding out in some, forest or somewhere, but I really think that he thought all of this through to the point that he did, and he has done some not good things, obviously, but he is taking precautions to protect himself. I think that they're probably gone. I'm not saying that in a bad way, I'm really wanting her to come home. That's all I want out of any of this, is for her to be home with her family. But I know that he has done a whole lot to cover his tracks and to keep them both safe, like the draft emails and stuff like that. He knew what he was doing.
Wow. With me is Destiny Parrish, who endured a friendship of sorts with Tad Cummins. Tad Cummins now wanted in the kidnap of his student, Elizabeth Thomas. Destiny, you're a very lucky young lady, and I want to thank you for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much again for having me.
And thank you also to CrimeCon, who is making our podcast possible today. Go to crimecon.com to find out about this convergence of crime busters and crime sleuths going down in June 9. And remember to use the code Nancy for 20% off when you plan your trip. I hope I see you there. Destiny, again, I can't thank you enough for talking to us, and it gives me a real insight into how Elizabeth got sucked into Tad Cummins' lies, and all the other teachers just apparently didn't notice. Hi, everybody. Nancy Grace here with Crime Stories, and with me, special guest, the elected district attorney, joining us from Tennessee, Brent Cooper. Brent was just telling us about how at the beginning when they first issued the Amber Alert, he was thinking, hey, I'm not sure about this. For all I know, they're just off fishing. Boy, did you do the right thing in issuing that Amber Alert, even though you knew Cummins and thought, man, he couldn't possibly have done this. You did your duty, and you issued that alert, having no idea that we would be this far into it and no sign of the kidnapped girl, Elizabeth Thomas. Brent, what's your theory on where they've gone?
It's obvious now that this was very well thought out, very well planned. And I think as every day goes by, the chances that they're actually in the States are lower. I just think that by now they would have had to have come out for some supplies, food, something, and somebody would have seen them. So at this point, the theory that I'm leaning on is that because he planned this in such a way that he had at least a 24-hour head start. I believe, he could have gone. They made it straight to the Mexican border and went into Mexico, which I believe you can do without a passport and really without any intervention by Mexican authorities. And I think they made their way into Mexico and probably found a rural, isolated location there. And another reason I think that is because, his finances were limited. He had $4,500 that we know of, and that would certainly go a lot further in Mexico than it would in the States. So, that's one distinct possibility at this point. But, I would have said from the beginning that 2-3 days tops, they'll be found.
With me, the elected district attorney, Brent Cooper. I'm just wondering how they could have slipped across the border with nobody noticing. And you believe he could be posing as a missionary in Mexico. Why does that come to mind?
Well, from talking with his family members, I knew he and his wife went to church, but apparently he's been a very devout Christian, and that he's studied the Bible extensively, and he may have even had some personal experience before going on mission trips with his church. So I believe that he was aware of that culture, so to speak, and I believe he could easily, very easily, blend in as an American missionary there, to help the poor people of Mexico. And that's certainly a role he could fit into, and in the small rural communities in Mexico and Central America, they don't have media coverage like we do here. They don't have televisions in every room, and they don't have the internet in a lot of cases, and it would be a lot more easy for them to remain unnoticed there than here.
Wow. Now, you believe he's gone on mission trips to Mexico before. What region?
I don't know any specific region, but after the meetings we had, I was of the belief that he had gone on at least one trip before, and it's common in this area for churches to send church members to places like that on mission trips.
Very common in my Methodist church back home in Macon. There we send out missionaries all the time. I mean, I've been on mission trips myself. Particularly after Katrina, I went for a long time to help rebuild following Katrina, and that was through my Methodist church up in New York. So it's very common for churches here to send out missionaries, and the church foots the bill and sends you and tries to help people. Another church I attend just sent out a whole fleet of people to Uganda to work. And, but I could see what you're saying, that he uses that knowledge from a previous church mission trip, knows his way around. That's where he will go naturally, wouldn't you think?
Definitely, that's a possibility. And that's why, you know, I've asked for, you know, churches in the area, especially his church, to, you know, when you go on those mission trips, when you come back, you've made contacts there. And, you know, I would encourage them to reach out to their contacts, in that part of the world where they've, gone on missions before, and spread the word, you know, email them the Amber Alert flyer.
Well, what role would the FBI play in that, Brent? Wouldn't the FBI be working on the Mexico issue?
They, you know, right as of now, they have passed the Amber Alert has been spread to the authorities in Mexico. But you know, how much publicity it's gotten, if any, down there, I don't know. And whether or not it's been as widely talked about there as it has been here, you know, I doubt it. But, you know, we're just any way we can think of to get the word out down there, we certainly want to.
Well, I'm just wondering if, I mean, for instance, do you know if the FBI was doing license tag grabs along the interstates to see if their tags showed up?
Oh yeah, we were doing that, you know, starting day one. You know, we sent out, of course, the tag information, and I know that all the highway patrols that have those tag readers were, you know, had them programmed in, so that you know, if they got a hit on that number, it would alert them as to what's going on.
Wow. So your best bet is that Tad Cummins is posing as a missionary in Mexico. I'm really surprised Elizabeth has not tried to reach any of her siblings or her dad.
Right. And that's probably the most surprising part, is that, you know, a 15-year-old girl hasn't reached out to, you know, a sister or a brother, to our knowledge. And just to let them know, if nothing else, just to let them know she's okay. And that's you know, somewhat concerning also that hasn't happened.
Alan, you want to jump in?
Do you think, sir, that you are closing in on him? Are you any closer than you were a couple of weeks ago? Or does this look like it's going into the long haul?
I think there's certainly a kind of a peak period that we've probably already passed where this case has been talked about and the information's being shared. But I think every day that more people find out about them and see their picture and see that tag number, I think, you know, that's one way that things are closing in. The more people that know about them, the lesser the possibility is that they're going to go unnoticed. So, but I do think with every day that goes by, that interest, you know, starts to drop a little bit. And especially with no new news to revitalize the story, you know, I mean, I'm surprised that it's still getting the attention it is, and I'm really glad and grateful that it is, so that we can keep people talking about it, and we can keep it on people's minds, so they'll continue to look for them.
Well, one of the remarkable things about this story, and Nancy and I have covered so many of these, is how much we're finding out about how crazy this guy was and what he was telling his students. A few minutes ago, one of his former students told us that he told students in class that he was a medical doctor who simply retired from his medical profession and because he wanted to teach high school.
Wow.
Have you heard that?
Yeah, I hadn't heard that particular story, but I'd heard numerous other ones, you know, where, you know, he's certainly building this fantasy.
Oh, wait. What other stories? What other stories has he told?
Well, that he was former FBI and his former CIA, and that he had millions of dollars stashed away. And I think he even told some kids that he had, you know, properties in different countries and mansions and things like that. It's just, I mean, the story just grows constantly, apparently, or it did while he was teaching.
Did you hear that song that he sang to a 14-year-old student a few years ago? Did you hear that?
I did hear part of that. Uh-huh.
Were you impressed with his musical ability? Mm. what did you think of that, sir?
That's not what impressed me, Alan. That's not what impressed me about that. Hey, I got to ask you something, Brent. Question. Guys, for those of you joining us now on our podcast here at Crime Stories, with me is the elected DA out of Tennessee on the Elizabeth Thomas case. You know, he just jarred my memory on one of his other tall tales he told, that he had like a safe house.
Right.
And I believe he said Costa Rica.
I think Honduras is what I heard.
When things got too hot. Oh, Honduras, yes. Right. When things got too hot in the U.S., you know, I know that's a big fat lie. I know that.
Right.
But it does give you a window into his thinking. I should have thought of that before. Mm-hmm. If he's talking about leaving the country for a venue like Honduras when things got too, quote, hot in the U.S., that's exactly what he's trying to do. That's his fantasy, and that's what he's living out.
It may very well be. That would certainly complicate matters if that's what he's managed to do. Yeah, I think he'd easily make it into Mexico.
I got a bad feeling, Brent. I'm just afraid that if he's cornered and he has nothing left to lose, lost his wife, his family, his job, I know he's got two guns, and it just keeps running through my head. If it's not handled just the right way, this could turn into a murder-suicide in a heartbeat, and that's what I don't want for this little girl. I feel like she just never had a chance with that mother and everything in her life, and now this, for Pete's sake. And you know what was interesting, Brent? The other little girl, the Destiny Parish girl that he was singing that love song to, you know, her mother was out of the picture too. Her mother was living in another state during a divorce, and she was motherless. I mean, he really focuses in on children that are the most vulnerable, that really don't have anybody helping them, and I just hate it. Hate it. Okay, Nancy Grace, Crime Stories, signing off. Again, thank you, CrimeCon, for sponsoring us today. Go to crimecon.com to get your 20% off, code word Nancy, to register for this big convergence of crime busters and crime sleuths in June. Nancy Grace, Crime Stories, signing off. Goodbye, friend.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.